have it the wrong way.
There you
can't
go.
You put it straight?
No.
Yitzchak and Rivka are now going to meet. Chapter 24. Rivka makes the decision that she will return with the servant Eliezer. And this is a shidduch she's going to look into. I think she's going to do this. The Torah tells us now, narrates the meeting, the initial meeting of Yitzchak and Rivka. Chapter 24, verse 62. Yitzchak ba miboy be'er l'chai ra'i. Yitzchak is coming from this place called Be'er l'chai ra'i, v'hu yeshev be'eretz ha-negev. At this point, he is living, dwelling in the south. So, Be'er l'chai ra'i is the place where the Malach revealed himself to Hagar. That's what we've heard of this place before. And the point was that Yitzchak now went to the place where Hagar was. He went to find Hagar. Why did he go to do that? Avram was worried about Yitzchak, and Yitzchak was worried about Avram. So he went to bring Hagar back. Shehalach lahavi es Hagar l'Avram aviv sheyisaena. He went to bring Hagar so that Avram should not be lonely, especially as Yitzchak now would be getting married and moving on to his own life. Avram should have companionship, and so he went to bring Hagar back to Avram, which Avram actually does. He remarries Hagar.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Only now her name is Keturah, and she becomes a very righteous person. Yitzchak is dwelling in the south. Karev la'oysa yibeir, close to that well. Shenemar, as it is written, Vayisa Mishom Avram Artsa HaNegev. Avram traveled from there southward. Vayeshev ben Kodesh, ben Shor, he lives, he settles between Kodesh and Shor, v'sham hoya ha-be'er, that's where this well was located. Shenemar, about this be'er, about this well, it said, hine ben Kodesh, u'ben Bored, and Bored is the place called Shor. Okay, so Yitzchak goes to find Hagar, and to bring Hagar home to Avram. And at this point, now the music goes a little faster, the drama begins. Yitzchak goes out. We'll see what lasuach means in a moment. Lifnes arav, towards evening. Vayisa einav, he raises his eyes up. Vehine gemalim boim, he sees camels coming. So Rashi says lasuach. Yitzchak went lasuach. What's lasuach? We never had this word lasuach before. It's the first time showing up anywhere in the Bible. So Rashi says that this losuach means Yitzchak went out to pray. Because losuach, which means sicha means talk or conversation. Here, losuach, which means sicha or talk or conversation, who is Yitzchak having a conversation with? He's alone. He went to bring Hagar to Avram Avinu, but Hagar is not accompanying him. He hasn't yet met his own wife. Who is he talking to? So Rashi says, l'shein tefillah, we therefore understand, as is brought down in the Bereishis Rabbah, that this means the concept of prayer. Yitzchak went to pray. As the whole idea of prayer is talking to Hashem. Doesn't mean it's a two-way conversation necessarily, but we're talking to Hashem. So Yitzchak went out to speak. And that speaking, we understand, is the concept of prayer as it is written in the book of Tehillim. In the book of Psalms, chapter 120, David HaMelech says, "Kemoy yishpoich sichay." He pours forth in conversation. But that conversation refers to prayer. And so since the pasuk, the verse in Psalm 120 is unequivocally talking of prayer, and here it says the word lasuach, and there's nobody to talk to, so it must be that what kind of speech are we discussing here? What are we referencing? The concept of prayer. Incidentally, not everybody agrees that lasuach basada means the concept of prayer. The Ravam is the closest to Rashi. He says that Yitzchak went lehit bodeid, like to meditate.
The first breslava.
Yeah, like the breslava chassidim. They go out, you know, to meditate and contemplate the greatness of Hashem and speak to Hashem in their minds. So Yitzchak went something like that. He doesn't see the idea of sicha means so much as speech, is more of a contemplative state. The other Rishonim seem to take the word lasuach and follow to something was written before, a siach. A siach would mean a bush or foliage, vegetation. And like the Rekeach says, the Rekeach is the only one of the Rishonim who says both. He says, ledaber v'leilich ben hasichim. He went to speak and talk amongst the foliage, amongst the vegetation. But like Rashbam and Radak, they say that means he went amongst the bushes. The Chizkuni even says he went to see what had to be done on the farm. Maybe he went to speak to some people on the farm. He was checking out the farmland. It's kind of interesting because we don't hear about Yitzchak being a farmer yet. We're only going to hear about his farming in the next parsha. And even then, it's not simple at all, but it's unusual. Yitzchak is living there, and he goes out for a stroll. Rashi says in a simple meaning, it's not an ordinary stroll. We speak here of a prayerful event. And in the midst of his prayers, he raises his eyes up, and he sees the camels are coming. So that's what Yitzchak's doing. Yitzchak is in a prayerful state, a meditative state. He lifts his eyes up, he sees camels approaching. Conversely, verse 64, Vatisa Rivka Seneha. Rivka raises her eyes up. Vateres Yitzchak, she sees Yitzchak, Vatipel Me'al HaGamal. She falls off the camel. Very odd verse. She fell in love. And she fell off the camel. So Rashi says, Vateres Yitzchak, it wasn't just she noticed, she happened to catch the glance. She saw Yitzchak and she was overwhelmed. Rasa Oisei Hadar. She saw Yitzchak, he cut a very dashing figure, very, very, very handsome person. V'soya mipanav. She was like a little bit like, you know, people get like tongue-tied. She was like uncomfortable. She was like overwhelmed from Yitzchak. Remember, she's much younger than Yitzchak. Yitzchak is a very tall, handsome man, and she's like a little bit overwhelmed. So what does it mean, vatipel? She fell off a camel? So Rashi says, no, it doesn't mean she fell off. In fact, it doesn't even mean she dismounted. It means hishmita la'aretz. She kind of slid off the camel. It's like you want to be in control of the situation. You don't want to be on the back of a camel that's doing his own thing. So Yitzchak, Rivka decided at this point she would get off the camel. So she slowly dismounted. Or really it seems like from Rashi, she didn't even get off the camel fully, but she kind of lowered the camel. As Rashi says, Kitargumai ve'israchinas. Israchinas means that she leaned or lowered the camel towards the ground. However, she says, Rashi maintains she was still sitting on the camel. V'lehigia ad karka. The camel didn't reach the earth. The camel lowered. Kemoi, for example, that uncle is rendered, hati no kadech, tip your jug. This is when Eliezer was asking to get some water. So Rashi says, arkini. And arkini doesn't mean the idea of putting it down. It means lowering. And similarly, we have a pasuk in Tilim where it says Vayetcha Mayim, God lowers the heavens, and Unkelus renders it Va'archin, so Lashon Muta La'aretz. This means hugging the ground, coming close to the ground, lowering. It doesn't mean being on the ground. V'daymaloi, similarly we could say Ki Yipel La'yutol, that whilst something may have fallen, however, it didn't entirely, so to speak. It's a nefila, which is not really an afila. It's not really falling, it's only lowering. Kaleimer, in other words, im yata la'aretz le'yegia adaretz. You lean towards the ground, but that doesn't mean she was actually on the ground. All right, it's like a circuitous Rashi over here. Well, that's almost like a grammar Rashi. What is the point, I guess? That when Rivka saw Yitzchak for the first time, she was overwhelmed, and she kind of got off her high horse, got off the high camel. And she lowered the camel. The camel was no longer in motion. Doesn't mean she fell off the camel. That's the way Rashi explains it. There are many, many, many mefarshim that speak about this in great length. The overwhelming strain of commentary emphasizes Rivka's impressions. She was overwhelmed, impressed, and respectful. But you know who this was. In fact, some of the mefarshim maintain that Rivka thought this was a local prince. Maybe like a ruler. She didn't know this was her husband-to-be. She just saw somebody who cut a very, very sharp figure. So, and she saw that person coming towards them. So kind of she lowered herself. Vatoimer al ha'eved, she says to the servant, Mi ho'ish halazeh, ha'heilu basad likraseinu. Who is that in the field that's now coming in our direction? Vayomer ha'eved, the servant says, Hu adoni, he is my master. When Rivka hears this, Vatika chatzaif, Vatiskas, she takes the veil and she veils herself. What does it mean, Vatiskas? It means she covers herself, Rashi says, Lashon v'hispoil. Kimoi, for example, what we find, and this is like a grammar Rashi, Vatikover, Vatishover, which are words that are vowelized in a way that make it to be Mispoel. Mispoel means reflexive onto oneself. So Rivka veiled herself out of modesty. Incidentally, it's from this that the custom comes that a Jewish bride goes to the chuppah veiled. Only she doesn't veil herself. Why doesn't she veil herself? Because in the next generation, Yaakov wanted to get married and have a good Jewish wedding. He said, my mother got, I was veiled at the time of the meeting, so my bride should be veiled too. And Lavan was only too happy to acquiesce. He said, oh, of course we're going to veil the bride, without any question. And Lavan veiled the bride. And when Yaakov discovered the bride, it was a different woman. So from then on, we said, you know what? Veiling is nice. However, the chassan himself will do a positive ID check, and then he will veil the bride by himself. But this idea of veiling, it doesn't mean that Chas v'Shalom Rivka demeaned herself. She had less self-respect. The veiling represents the idea that the relationship between Yitzchak and Rivka was not based superficially on external beauty, on charisma, but rather this was a character-driven relationship. It was about the quality of these two people, not the fact that Yitzchak was handsome and Rivka was beautiful. And that's the idea of what the veiling represents.
It says twice, Eved, in the same pasuk, instead to say Eliezer.
It never says Eliezer. In the whole parsha, Eliezer's name is not mentioned even once.
That's right.
Not once. Eliezer is an enigma. We had a whole class about this two nights ago. So Eliezer, the Rabbeinu Bechaya says that at the beginning of the story, he's Ha'eved, 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 and then when he finds Rivka, all of a sudden it becomes Ha'ish. Then for a whole slew of verses, he's Ha'ish. The Rabbeinu Bechaya explains that's because at that point the Malach that Avraham Avinu sent with Eliezer kind of became conjoined. He linked into that iCloud. So he wasn't only operating on his own system anymore. Now he had the Malach with him. And then he had to go through the whole negotiations to get the Malach with him. But now that he brings Rivka to Yitzchak, the Malach is gone. He says, I did my job. That's it. I'm out of here. And he becomes Ha'eved once again. Perhaps the most important lesson of the whole story of Ha'eved is that what Eliezer does here, bringing Yitzchak and Rivka together, is an extraordinary feat, an amazingly important event in Jewish history. But the reason he was able to accomplish something amazing was not because he was so amazing, but rather because he was self-effacing, he was Ha'eved. He was ready to do what Avraham Avinu said. He realized it's not about me, because if it was about him, nothing was special would have happened, because he wasn't so special. But as long as he remembered that he was Ha'eved, and later on when the Malach came, he was Ha'ish, but he was never Eliezer, the son of Nimrod, a grandson of Nimrod, or Canaan, or whoever else the Medrash says that he was, as long as he wasn't emphasizing his own accomplishments and achievements, but rather that his willingness to follow instructions, great things were able to be accomplished. Anyway, at this point, he's just Ha'eved again. He gives his cameo role goes further into the background, and Yitzchak and Rivka take over. And so, Vayisaper Ha'eved, he does his last part. This is Eliezer's last, his only like last few lines, the speaking part. But nobody hears what he's saying anyway. He just goes through the motions. Vayisaper Ha'eved LeYitzchak. The Eved tells Yitzchak kol ha'dvarim asher asa, all the things that he did. All the things that he did.
It's okay.
And at that point, the Eved shrinks into the background, and we do not hear about Eliezer ever again. This is the last time he's heard of. Last time is in verse 66. Vayisaper ha'eved liYitzchak. He told Yitzchak everything that happened. Now, it's interesting that Rashbam says, why does it say, Hu ha'ish halazeh? And he says, it's not uncommon when you see something distant that you want to know, what exactly is that? So that's how Rivka's initial reaction was. Who is that? Like, she saw from a distance. She didn't see close. Just this guy cutting a figure. Who is that? And Eliezer instantly recognizing Yitzchak, says, this is my master. And so he tells Yitzchak everything that happened. What is he telling Yitzchak? What's he going to tell her? So Rashi says he's telling Yitzchak, Gila lo yahanisim shenasale. He tells Yitzchak there have been many miracles unfolding in the last 2 days. I came there in a miracle. 12 days journey conflated into one. I returned in a miracle. 12 days journey conflated into one. Kofza lo yaharetz. The land shrank before me. I got there the same day. As I got there, and I started to pray, even his dam no lay rifka b'shah b'tfilase. He was in the middle of praying still, as we learned a few days ago. He didn't even finish making his entreaty, and results came. The rapid result, which was unprecedented. It never happened to Eliezer before. In fact, it only happens a few times in all of Jewish history that somebody should pray and be answered instantaneously. So he tells all of this to Yitzchak. What do you think Yitzchak hears? I think Yitzchak hears when Eliezer is speaking. He hears the hand of Hashem. He hears this is not just an ordinary situation. So, okay, now we'll start the dating process. He says, this is unbelievable. This has got to be it. But Yitzchak wants to see for himself. So, vayivieha Yitzchak ha'ayola, he brings her into the tent of Sarah Imai, of Sarah his mother. Vayikach es Rivka, and then he takes Rivka. Vatehi loy li'isha, she becomes his wife. Vayieha veha, he loves her. Vayinochem Yitzchak achara Imai, Yitzchak finds comfort after the loss of his mother. Yitzchak only knew one woman in his whole life, and that was his mother. He had no other benchmark to measure a woman up against. And Sarah Imenu is like patriarch Sarah, the mother Sarah, the matriarch. So he knows, he has a sense of his destiny. He knows what he has to do now. He's got to be the next generation, the next link in the chain. But he can't do this himself. He needs a good wife to do it. So he has to see if Rivka is like Sarah. You cannot say Vayivieha Yitzchak Ha'olah means that he brought her home, which means he married her. Because a moment later it says Vayikach es Rivka, he took Rivka. And we know that in biblical jargon, the word Vayikach, taking, oftentimes refers to the concept of marriage. So what does it mean Vayivieha? What does it mean when it says that he brought her? So clearly it means that he put her in a situation. He put her in the environment of Sarah to see if she would flourish. Rashi says, it can't just mean that he brought her into a tent. So what? He brought her home. And what? Rashi says, Vayivieha ha'ayala. He brought her into the tent, the dwelling of Sarah. Vahrei hi Sarah imay. And he felt as if it was his mother. Kaleimar, in other words, Enasis dugmas Sarah imay. She became the paradigm of the woman Yitzchak had known of Sarah. Shakol's man, how could you say she became Sarah? Sarah died, she was 127 years old, and Rivka is only a few years old. She's 3 years old here. Very mature, very grown up, maybe like a girl who's 17 or 18. But the fact is, in what way could she have looked exactly the same? And anyway, how could somebody walk in and all of a sudden she's Sarah? It cannot be literal. So it must be figurative. So Rashi explains, Vayevieha ha'ayla and vihine sara imay kalaymar, in other words, Vinas's dugma sara imay, she became in the image or paradigm of Sarah. And Rashi gives us three examples which were demonstrable of this change within Rivka or this message that Yitzchak was able to identify. Kol zman shesara kayemes, as long as Mother Sarah was alive, so then there was three miraculous phenomenon that had been regularly observed in the tent, in the locale, in the dwelling place of Sarah Imenu. The first one was with regard to the Shabbat candles. Shahoya ner daluk, that there was a candle that burnt, that continued to light me erev Shabbat ad le'erev Shabbos. So Sarah Imenu had special Shabbat candles. They burnt all week. She would light her candles, and from Shabbat, the whole week would be illuminated. Number two, bracha mitzuya be'isa. There was something unique when Sarah made bread. A small amount of flour somehow became a larger amount of dough. And finally, the anan, there was this proverbial cloud that hugged the tent, was kosher al ha'oil. Umishamesa, when Sarah passed, that proverbial cloud, that aura, disappeared. Pascha. when Rivka came into the tent, or so to speak, moved into Sarah's position, Chazru, these things returned. And so Yitzchak finds comfort. He realizes this is the right one. He hears what Eliezer says. He hears about the miracles. He sees that she has the qualities necessary. She is like Sarah. At that point, he falls in love with her. Then Vayivia. Then he loves her. He's the opposite of today. People first fall in love, then they wonder if they're compatible or not. Because the truth is that the compatibility doesn't change afterwards. If there's no compatibility, no matter how strong the love is, it's not compatible. It doesn't really work. And then people have tzaras and have difficulty down the line. We live in a society that's more love-driven than ever before. We also live in a society that's more divorce-driven than ever before. So you ask the question, what's going on over here? We're so smart, we have it together, we're so cool, everybody's loving everybody, and it's a whole so romantic. Why is there so much divorce? Because we have it all wrong. Instead of finding out first if there's compatibility, first you find out if there are feelings. First you find out if there's romance. First you find out if there's excitement. Oh, by the way, could this work? No, actually it can't. Ah, but I feel too strongly anyway. So, like in the shidduch system, it's the other way around. First you find out if it's compatibility. There's a lot of things about compatibility that others can find out for you. You don't have to find out by yourself. You don't have to invest yourself. You don't have to expose yourself and put yourself through a difficult situation. And when family and friends who care deeply about you and your parents who worry about you find out if there's compatibility, then there can be an introduction. And then, with God's help, if it's the right thing, so then love can blossom. That's clearly how it was with Yitzchak. So this is Achare Imay Derech Eretz. Rashi says, just finish off with the last Rashi, because Matshe Imay Shel Adam Kayemes, as long as a person's mother is alive, Karuchu Etzla, he remains tethered to his mother. Mishem Esa, when a mother passes on, Umisnachem Be'ishtoi, this is the nature, a man finds comfort then in his wife. So this is the story of Yitzchak, and this is not Rashi's telling us something sacred or holy necessarily, but rather Derech Eretz, that's just the way it is. Okay, we're going to conclude this morning's class with an analysis of these miracles. And specifically, we're going to take a look at the words that Rashi employs and the phraseology that he uses in comparison with the source of Rashi, which is the Medrash. And we're going to notice something very interesting. Rashi seems to reverse the order of the source that he quotes, which is unusual. Page Resh Tzadik Aleph in the Biurim book. Sidram shal shloishes hanisim b'divrei Rashi, the order of the miracles of which Rashi speaks of them, introduces them to us, Tzarech Biur, requires elucidation. Remember, the miracles were the Shabbat candles, then we talk about kitchen, the bracha be'isa, and then we talk about the aura, the presence. So Rashi, the Rebbe asks two questions. Number one, Shalosha Nisim Elu Huva B'Medrash. These three miracles are talked about in the Medrash. Avosham Aseidir Hubadiyuk Lehepuch. In the Medrash, the order is exactly the opposite. In the Medrash, it says, Anun Kosher al Pesach Ha'ilah, that there was an aura that emanated from the entrance to her tent, a cloud. There was Bracha Mishulachas Be'isa, there was blessing that was sent forth into the dough. And finally, Ner Deilek B'Leil Shabbos Vad Leil Shabbos. The candles, the lamps were burning from Friday night to Friday night. So what's the obvious question? Madua Shina Rashi Meseder Anisim Shebe Medrash. If Rashi, after all, is quoting the Medrash, why would he quote the Medrash in a different order? Why would he scramble the order? You're quoting the Medrash, quote the Medrash. The Medrash as is. Number two, the Rebbe asks, Madua Higdim Rashi as Hanes. Why does Rashi preface first the miracle of Ner Dolok Me'erev Shabbos L'Erev Shabbos? She didn't show up on Friday night. It can't be showed up on Friday night. Because Yitzchak, Eliezer was sent, the day he left was the day he came, and then he left the next day automatically back. There's no way he could have known he was going to have a miraculous journey, and he wouldn't have set out Erev Shabbat. So we have to assume it was the beginning of the week. If it was the beginning of the week, maybe it was Monday, maybe it was Tuesday, but it wasn't later than that. So if it's the beginning of the week, when does Shabbat come? When does Shabbat candles come? Only Friday night. So why would you say that first? That's the last of the miracles. A week would go by, you finally arrived at Shabbat, and that's when all of a sudden we could see whether or not her Shabbat candles were miraculous in nature, as were Sarah's. Whereas the other miracles, b'nigud l'nisim ha'achayim, shanita nahoya l'raisa miyad, you got to eat bread. When? On Shabbos? You got to eat every day. So if Rivka got to work and she said, who's making dinner tonight? And Yitzchak said, I don't know. We haven't eaten here since mom died. Rivka said, okay, I'll take over. And she made dinner. And if there was an aura that was engendered with Rivka's presence, it must have been something that came right away. So Rashi, for some strange reason, reverses the order. Not only does he reverse the order, it's a non-logical order. The order in which things would have happened would be like the Medrash says. So it sounds like if the Medrash would have had it in an order in which it doesn't unfold, it doesn't happen. So I say Rashi put it into the order that it happened. Because Pshut Shel Mikra, Rashi is giving us, so here's what happened. But in fact, that's not the case. It's the other way around. So the Rebbe says, V'yesh Levaya, we could explain this as follows. B'divrei ha-medrash, in the words of the Medrash, ha-dogesh, the emphasis, hu ochen al hanisim kishla'atzma. The emphasis is on the miracles themselves. V'lochein, therefore, ha-medrash moina isim lefi seder zmanayim. The Medrash takes a look and says, okay, when did these miracles happen? Miyad she'nichnas Rivka l'bayis, the moment Rivka walked into the house, what happened? Chazer onan. The aura, she had the aura. She created that environment. The cloud, so to speak, was suddenly there. It was unbelievable. It was like this tent was a sad, empty place. And the moment Rivka walked in, all of a sudden the tent came back to life. So the aura was instantaneously noticed. And that's why the Medrash says that first. La'achar mikain, after this, because she'afsa isa, which, like we said, you got to eat dinner. Somebody's got to make some food. So nikar hayosha bracha metzuyuba. It's unbelievable. It took a little bit of flour. All of a sudden, there was a meal for the whole family. And then, la'achas shavua shalem, when a full week passed. In fact, you wouldn't need just a week to get to Friday night. How would you know that the candles burned from Friday night to Friday night? You wouldn't know that. Even if this was on Friday, which likely it wasn't, even if it was on Friday, when would you know that the candles were miraculous? Only the next Friday. So it could be like 10 days later. That makes sense. That was when Neuchichar Kaliris, everybody saw. Look at that. The lamp is still burning. It's Friday. The lamp is still burning. It's miraculous. She is the Wonder Woman. She is the one. She is going to replace, so to speak, the next matriarch of the Jewish people. However, B'divri Rashi Lumazos, in the words of Rashi, Hadogosh Eini Kolkach Al Anisim Kishel Atzmon, we speak not of the miracles in and of themselves, but rather be'ikir al hashba asam shel hanisim elu al hachlatos shel Yitzchak. This is Yitzchak putting this woman up against a litmus test. Is she the one? I think she's the one. I'm not just going to fall in love with her. I need to find out if she's the one. If she's not the one, if she's not compatible, if she can't be the next matriarch, then there's no point. This is not going to happen.
Yeah, but Avraham Avinu said all the simanim.
All the simanim are there, and Yitzchak's got to see for himself now. It's very nice. Here's Eliezer's stories. It all sounds good, but I gotta see. Does she measure up? So therefore, this was an issue of Yitzchak seeing, is this the right girl? Is this the right woman? Is this who I'm going to marry? And here the emphasis is on what made the biggest impact. What influenced Yitzchak's decision most? And the answer is, the reason that Yitzchak said, I'm going to marry this woman, was because she was gorgeous. No, because she was Sarah Imena, that's why. Because she was like Sarah. He said, Sarah to me is the perfect woman. When she's like Sarah, then I know that's the one we're going to marry. So Yitzchak needs to know she's like Sarah. And therefore, the question is, which proved most that Rivka was like Sarah? And this, the Rebbe says, the order is very different. The first thing that proved she was most like Sarah was the Ner Dolok Me'erev Shabbos Le'erev Shabbos. The first thing that influenced Yitzchak's decision most, more than anything else, was the lamp that was burning. Why? Because this was a Nes Shehisrachesh B'Kiyum Mitzvah. This was a miracle that happened in the frame of fulfilling a mitzvah. And that was when Rivka did a mitzvah. So the idea of mitzvah, doing a mitzvah, that had the strongest influence. The next thing was Bracha Mitzuya Be'isa. That the blessing was found in the dough. This is a nes shel hatzlocha b'maisi odeha. Maybe not a mitzvah, but still her handiwork. The actions she took. The things she did. So the mitzvahs she performed, that had the strongest influence. The things she did and the success it engendered, that was the second step. Al af she'ein ze ma'isa mitzvah, even though it's not an act of a mitzvah per se, nonetheless, it's a sacred act. It's not a sacred act, pardon me, but it's something she did. And then ulo basayif, in the end, he looks to the cloud that hugs the tent. He looks to the idea of the aura. Neis shekosher b'hashpa osa klolus shel Rivka. It's not something she did, but rather it's who she was. The difference between things we do, and then there's an aura or an atmosphere that's engendered almost automatically. It's not because of what we do, it's because of maybe who we are that we bring this kind of energy where we go. But not because of something he did. Well, lefi zeh, based on this analysis, or this way of looking at things, through this prism, yesh levayer lehevdol nosef ben hamedrash Rashi, we could explain another difference between the medrash and Rashi. The language of the medrash is, ner dolak milele Shabbos, that the lamps burnt from the night of Shabbos, the eve of Shabbos, the night. Vilo Rashi mishanav a case of ner dolak me'erev Shabbos. Erev is the evening or late afternoon. It's before Shabbat arrives. Lele is the night of Shabbos when Shabbos is already here. So why the difference? Why does the Medrash speak about when Shabbos is already here, whereas Rashi speaks about Erev Shabbos, as Shabbos is falling, as Shabbos is arriving? HaMedrash madgish be'ikir es ha'nes shebedavar. The Medrash emphasizes the miracle nature of this reality. When did the miracle nature come to light? At night. Be'lel Shabbos. Ka'asher b'derech ha'teva, Hashem en shebener ha'yitzarech l'chalois. When the oil should have already burnt out, and now it's night. It's the night of Shabbos. So my candle lighting is 5 o'clock, it's 6 o'clock, it's 7 o'clock. It's midnight! It's night! It's still burning. That's when they started to see, oh, this is not an ordinary lamp. She's like a miracle lady. Her lamps are like Sarah's lamps. But that was only noticed at night. Whereas for the perspective of Rashi, where Yitzchak seeks not miracles, but Yitzchak seeks the actions taken by Sarah, Rashi says it's the mitzvah. When did the mitzvah get performed? Erev Shabbos, before Shabbos arrived. In other words, Yitzchak was not looking for a miracle lady. He was looking to see who Rivka was, what Rivka does. And when he saw the way she fulfills it, does a mitzvah, the way she fulfills a mitzvah. And of course, the way the mitzvah gets fulfilled miraculously, but most importantly, how does she do a mitzvah? And when she's how she deals with the tasks or chores that come her way, like bracha metzuya be'isa. But the first thing is how she approaches it. And then he sees that there's even an aura that's engendered, and he knows that's the right word. And one might add that this is not only history, but something that's relevant in today's day and age. When somebody's looking for a spouse, this is the things you got to look for. How important are the mitzvahs? How do you do? What are the things you do in life? And last but not least, you can wonder about the aura and all of that other nice stuff. But first and most importantly, how do they treat a mitzvah? How do they behave? What are they doing on a regular basis? And we could say much more, but we're out of time, as they say.